Glenn.
Yes.
Adding myself as a visitor on this call too. So I'm not here precisely. The main purpose for joining for my joining of the call is not to replace Vittorio, but to make some comments.
No, no, that's, and we're very pleased about that, Thomas. Thanks.
Cheers, well, Glenn.
Sorry, who is that?
This is Ross. How are you?
Ross. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Glenn. It's Franny, too.
Hi, Franny. Welcome.
Thank you.
Brian Lenning of the CCDN.
Welcome, Brian. How do you spell your last name?
The last name is Lenning, L-E-H-N-I-N-G.
Thank you very much. Of the CCH.
Of the Copyright Coalition on Domain Names, the CCDN.
CCDN, thank you.
Yes, hi, Margie Milam from Mark Monitor.
Hi, Margie.
Hi.
And the spelling of your name is M-I-L-H-A-M.
M-I-L-A-M, Milam.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you.
Just joined?
No, I think that was a mute sound that we heard.
Okay.
That was Ken Stubbs just muting.
For anyone who hasn't been on these calls before, to mute your phone, you can just press 6. And to unmute it, you also press 6.
Why don't we go ahead and get started? I'm sure people will continue to join as we get going. But as everyone knows, this is a sort of a public forum on the Task Force 3 preliminary report, and I guess it's a supplement to the public comment process that's underway. I believe everyone's aware that the period for extending or for submitting public comments has been extended through, I believe, July 5, and that can be done. The comments can be submitted on the ICANN website. There's a link for doing so. This call, consistent with ICANN practice, is being recorded, and at some point we're going to try to get a volunteer who would agree to have a transcript made so that the comments made on the call today can be included some way, perhaps as an appendix to the supplemental preliminary report, which we're going to try to submit to the GNSO Council, I think, on or about July 12th. But this is really it's an open forum. We just want to get the various views of everyone on the call and to see whether and to what extent those views can move the process forward. We don't have a formal agenda. It's really just an opportunity for people to express their views. So why don't we just start? We'll have a queue. If anybody has a comment, feel free to proceed. We'll have a queue simply to keep things organized. But please look forward to receiving your comments.
Thomas here. Thomas Wessler. Why don't I start? Shall I?
Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
Okay, I'll limit my comments to the proposed best practices. Let me begin with practice 5. ICANN should also consider including such a last verified date and method of verification as with data elements. That sounds like a reasonable suggestion, but in a policy report, it should either be a consensus policy or it should really be an item for further policy making. And from the way it's being presented here, I would guess that this should be dealt with in a future policy development process that could be clarified. ICANN should consider, it doesn't really make much sense in a task force report that basically documents the considerations ICANN is doing on certain topics. So that about number 5. Proposed best practice number 6 talks about plans for compliance and then goes into that registrars should submit to ICANN and that should be published by ICANN and then goes on into very much detail on what these plans should actually contain. I'm seeing a suggestion here that to me sounds like a burden to registrars with unclear benefit, and further, it's entirely unclear to me what kind of status the recommendations of what these plans should contain, what kind of status these recommendations actually have. After all, there is no obligation, and I don't see an obligation in the recommendations as drafted, that registrars have such plans. So this practice would, at the very least, this best practice would, at the very least, need a lot of consideration and a lot of refinement. I'm skipping the individual steps here and jump to proposed best practice number 7. ICANN should require domain name registrants to update and correct WHOIS data on an annual basis. You're probably aware of the WDRP, the WHOIS data reminder policy that was designed by the DNSO WHOIS task force. That policy already mandates annual reminders of registrants concerning WHOIS data policy, and I actually fail to see how this proposed new policy is actually different from the existing policy that also has been implemented by ICANN and has specific compliance dates for registrars. So I think that best practice 7 is basically, no change to the current status. This should be considered in detail, probably. Best practice number 8, ICANN should consider requiring registrars to verify at least 2 data elements, of the 3 data elements, phone, fax, and email, and ensure they function. When none of the 3 work, domain name should be placed on hold immediately. What does immediately mean? Does that mean you send me an email, you give me a call, you send me a fax, I don't respond today, my domain name goes on hold? I think that's pretty dangerous. I remember some very extensive discussions on the DNSO WHOIS task force, Ken Stubbs was there too, for instance, where the question was considered how much time should be given to registrants to respond to accuracy queries. And from my recollection back then, there was general convergence that, well, even 15 days time to respond before a domain name even goes on hold would be too little time. There was discussion of this on the council level too, and the only thing which kept a PDP on this topic from happening was Louis Touton's clarification that current language only says that registrars have a right to cancel registrations after 15 days of non-response, but not a duty. So the immediately here sounds like a recommendation that is dangerous to existing domain name registrants, regardless what kind of registrants this is. It sounds like it goes against the kind of consensus that was forming out in previous task forces. And I repeat, there was lots of discussion on this topic. There was quite a bit of public comment, in particular from developing countries with underdeveloped communications infrastructure. So if any such process were to be considered, it would need quite extended and very clear timelines. Let me go on with this recommendation. If only one of the means of communications works, then the domain name shall be placed on hold for a period of 15 days. Once again, 15 days isn't much time. Then we also have a catch-22 here. Assume that email is the only means of communications that works. Assume that the email address that works actually uses the domain name we are talking about. By putting the domain name on hold, you actually disable the only remaining communications channel. This is counterproductive. You get from little contactability to no contactability. That's not anybody's interest, I believe. So I would argue that recommendation 8 needs substantial revision before it can be implemented without causing considerable harm to registrants and actually even to those seeking to contact registrants. Number 9, where domain name registration is cancelled due to non-functionality of WHOIS data elements, the domain name can be reconnected for a fee. This one is in substance very similar to the other accuracy-related consensus policy of the DNSO WHOIS task force, which specifically dealt with the interaction between redemption grace period, that's a mechanism by which a domain name once cancelled is reconnected, and accuracy complaints. So I think that this recommendation deals with that are done by now. Number 10 talks about cancelling all registrations with identical contact data to a domain name that is cancelled. This recommendation is harmful in an important corner case, and that important corner case is that the contact data actually belong to an existing entity, but that this entity does not hold the domain name in question. We heard in Tunis from Marilyn Cade about a case where they had phishing coming from a domain name that was registered by a person whose identity had been stolen. In this identity theft scenario, you would kill a domain name that was registered fraudulently, and you would also kill all the domain names related to the individual whose identity was stolen here. So this one is very broad and has the danger of causing considerable collateral damage to persons who are victims of abuse when it occurs. Besides that, it's not at all clear to what extent this recommendation is implementable. It may be worth having a look at the discussions of the DNSO WHOIS Implementation Committee. Recommendation 11, ICANN staff should undertake a review, etc. This recommendation basically just says what we recommend should be implemented. That's the purpose of a task force report, so I don't think this makes much sense as a best practice. And finally, recommendation 12 talks about graded sanctions against registrars. I find that surprising because on page, let me look, I'm sorry? On page 8 of the Task Force 3 report, we have a summary of ICANN's Internic WDPRS report, and that summary gives us 19 complaints about submitters dissatisfied with problem resolution when 24,000 accuracy reports were dealt with. That makes complaints in one case in 1,000. The graduated sanction program may be a little out of proportion here for the kind of compliance problem that's actually documented. So I'm not sure this recommendation makes sense. And if it makes sense, or if you believe it makes sense, then there should be clear documentation what kind of problems is supposed to be cured by that. I think I'll leave it with these comments. And yes, thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. One thing I would stress for all those commenting today is it would be very helpful, obviously, if you could submit your comments in writing as well so that we'll have that documented. And then for a task force's perspective, just a little procedural issue, Ross Rader and Franny Wellings had indicated that they would be involved in updating the preliminary report to take into account the public comments that have been received. And I just wanted to remind you all of that just to make sure that to the extent that you're it may facilitate things if you're taking detailed notes of what's transpiring on the call today. And, of course, we do have the MP3 recording being made simultaneously. Anyone else have any comments?
Brian?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Ken Stubbs. I did want to reaffirm the comments that Thomas made with respect to the time necessary to effectively communicate on issues where there may be a problem with a main name. We had long discussions, Steve Metallitz, myself, and others in the previous task force, about the time period that ICANN currently has for registrars that allows them the option of acting if they do not hear a response in 15 days. And in deference, again, to the emerging economies and nations and areas of the world where there can be issues on communication, I think we really need to very closely look at that. And I think we might be a little too arbitrary in even putting in a specific time period. I think ICANN, for the, let's say the next 6 months, 6 to 12 months, should probably take a close look at what would most effectively deal with those problems and in terms of timing. Thanks.
Thank you. Others have comments they'd like to share.
Yes, this is Margie Milam. I had a comment.
Okay, Margie.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I agree with the prior to callers about number 8. I think that the time periods are rather strict, and it wasn't clear what you meant when it says ICANN should consider requiring the verification. Is that of all the records, or is that a random verification process, or triggered by a complaint, if you will? But that might need some clarification. And one of my suggestions, I think, would be instead of having such a strict time period on when something needs to be on hold or something needs to be canceled, whether it could be linked to something like, an illegal act, if you will, if there's a phishing problem or an infringement or some other act that's being caused by the domain name, that might justify putting the name on hold immediately. So but if it's just inaccurate information, the time period may be a little strict given, the time it is required to communicate with your customer to make sure that the information is correct.
So you're saying then that if there's an allegation by a third party that there's some illegal activity regarding a domain name, then in that instance you would have a shorter time frame for putting a domain name on hold, but in other instances where it's just a question of whether or not the data is accurate and verified, that there's not a need for as strict a time frame. Is that
right? Yeah, because there's a lot of situations, like I think some of the other reports talked about the problem of phishing or other frauds that are, involve a domain name in it. And, I could see in that situation you want some sort of immediate, ability to put a name on hold. But there may be some legitimate reasons why it's taking long to get the record updated. And so I think that would be something you should consider.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Brian is here. Could I get onto the queue, please?
Yes, Thomas, please proceed.
Yeah. I think I was interrupting someone else, so.
Yeah, this is Ken Stubbs. Can you put me in the queue after Thomas, please, Brian? Thank you.
Sure.
Just one comment. Margie just noted that in instances of phishing or abuses tied to a domain name, there should be procedures in place to take domain names down quickly. Would be very concerned to see a hard and fast ICANN policy that says upon receipt of allegation of infringement, the domain name is taken down. It's opening up a way to attack domain names and to make them insecure by alleging spamming activity, alleged spam activity has the domain name taken down. I've experienced such cases in the past with respect to web hosting, where, for instance, the weblog of Professor Edward Felton at Princeton was taken down because of a misdirected spam complaint. It took several days to get it back up, and I do not believe that ICANN policies should be designed in a way that mandates that kind of practice. There has to be a lot of leeway and a lot of investigation before an allegation of misbehavior leads to cancellation or hold of a domain name. You have to be extremely careful here.
Ben, did you have a comment?
Yes, I did. First of all, I'd have to agree with Thomas entirely here. Secondly, I'm not a lawyer, but if I was a lawyer and I was counsel ICANN, I would say you guys don't want to even get in the middle of this. I could see some potential real problems even with phishing, in that if the guy is using a legitimate domain or what appears to be a legitimate domain, and if it's not investigated properly, you may in effect throw the baby out with the bathwater. I could just see Citicorp's domain being pulled down because somebody was phishing, trying to get credit card information using a false or fictitious Citicorp addresses. So I think from a practical standpoint, it's very, very thin ice for ICANN to even be getting involved in a situation like that. I think it's more a matter of acting on legitimate authority. If the courts in a legitimate jurisdiction determine that something should be done, that's one case. And I think we just, I think we're stepping a little too far afield here if we get into areas like that. Thank you.
Thomas here. I'd like to add one thing to the point Ken just made, and I think he made a very important point here. If you look at recent phishing scams, then you will notice that the domain name that is being used in the actual URL, if there is a domain name in there at all, that this domain name has nothing to do with the scam. It's not registered for scamming purposes. It's another victim of the scammer. It's someone whose machines have been hacked and are being abused. That's by now the standard procedure, as far as I can see from my spam box. So even here, even in this case, in the case that the domain name is directly linked to phishing because it shows up there, this does not have to mean that this is actually backed bad actor holding this domain name. It may be an innocent third party who is struggling with some heavy problems themselves at this point.
This is Ken Stubbs, and that's exactly why, if I was counsel like him, I would advise him about getting him into something like this. I think that it's just very, very dicey.
Brian?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Keith Barrett of the INTA, who is subcommittee.
Hi, Keith.
We actually submitted comments already to the task force report. I'm not sure if anyone's had a chance to review those or not, but I wanted to flag one proposal that we had made. And as everyone knows, Ronald Reagan died recently, and perhaps our views were either inspired by or skewed by his death. But one thing we sort of bandied about was trying to put some entrepreneurial spirit into registrars to actually go out and try to verify the accuracy of the WHOIS data. So one thought we had was to allow registrars to basically charge a false WHOIS penalty, or a bounty, if you will, when they determine that WHOIS data that has been submitted to them is false. So registrars would not be responsible for determining if it's deliberately false or negligently false, but just simply if they can, however they can determine and verify in some manner that the information is false, the registrar, the agreement they have with registrants, as approved by ICANN, would allow them to charge some kind of penalty for submitting false information. On the flip side, to also give registrants a financial incentive to provide accurate data, or to rather correct inaccurate data, if they then correct the data, they would get some percentage of that penalty or bounty back to them. And we don't know what the numbers would be or anything like that, but the idea is to give registrars some financial incentive to make it profitable for them to verify in whatever manner they are able to whether or not the data is correct. So it gets a little bit away of trying to create a best practices, a technical fix, if you will, to what the best way of verifying the data is, because frankly it looks like none of the registrars or other online companies, not just in the internet world or in the ICANN world, but other online companies, they don't necessarily want to reveal how they verify their data. It's a trade secret. So there's competitive advantage to being able to verify data. So it seems like from the lack of responses that Task Force 3 has had, that there's a very, very much a reluctance for companies to reveal, theoretically it's confidential, so you may not know that it's AOL's, technique, but why would AOL, just to throw one out of the hat, want to tell all of its competitors, essentially, how, best to verify that, people you're dealing with are actually who they say they are. So that's just one thought. It may not have any legs. We don't know. It was just something that we raised, and we thought it was perhaps worth some further thought by the greater community.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I think that's an interesting concept. I'd be curious as to what others think about that.
Thomas here. I'd like to be in the queue on that.
Okay. Please.
Just to make sure I got this right, the proposal is to permit the registrars set up their contracts with registrants so this bounty system can happen. Is that correct?
That's basically correct, although permit and even perhaps require so that all registrars and registrants have the same underlying contractual terms, because if there are some registrars who do not opt in, they may then become the more preferred registrars for registrants, because obviously a registrant who has a typo when they put in the WHOIS data and then get hit with a false WHOIS penalty, that can be a, it's one of the drawbacks of the proposal, but it does provide incentive for people to be more careful when they're providing that WHOIS data up front.
So my follow-up question, in particular, if it's supposed to be just a permission, would be, is it forbidden right now? I don't see anything in the ICANN contract that would keep registrars from implementing the system you are proposing.
I don't believe it's forbidden, but why would a registrar want to do that now if it's just basically going to drive customers away?
Okay.
Why would a registrar go to a registrar who says, if you make a typo, I'm going to charge you $1,000?
I think there's no end of people that would be willing to line up to pay to have an accurate data in the WHOIS. I think it would be a great business.
Well, certainly the registrars would love that, but if only some registrars are imposing that penalty, that will drive down their customer base.
I think it would increase it, actually.
Why do you think that?
Because there's no end of nefarious reasons why you'd want to have inaccurate data, and charging people for that privilege is a great way to attract those people.
Well, no, I'm not saying that this is the only cure for inaccurate data. We're not saying this is in lieu of deleting the domain if the data is inaccurate. It's not either or. So it's not, gee, you can pay $1,000 and then have the privilege of having inaccurate data. That's not what we're proposing. So there's still the sanctions available to the registrar of ultimately yanking the domain name if the data is false and is not updated. We're just trying to provide some incentive earlier on in the process where registrars will have some financial reasons to verify the data up front. And then, as it turns out, if the data is inaccurate, then they still have the full range of options to take against the registrant. I hope that clarifies. I think that may have been a misunderstanding.
And Brian, did you perhaps want to make an announcement about the HTML version being available shortly?
I'm sorry, Barbara. I mean, I guess you're talking about what Glenn sent around this morning, and I can do that. I thought I had done it earlier in the call, but I'm sure we had others join afterwards. Barbara's referring to the fact that shortly there will be available on the ICANN website an HTML version of the Task Force 3 preliminary report, which is a little bit easier to read because it has hyperlinks to the various sections, and so it facilitates navigation through the report, and that will likely be posted shortly, probably within the next day or two. So look for that on the site, and it should be there shortly.
It's up on the site already, Brian.
Yes?
Sorry, it's Glenn. It's up on the site already.
Okay. Great.
Is this call finished now, or?
Well, what I thought we could do, if anyone has any additional comments, I think we should take them now. Otherwise, I suppose we could wait a few minutes and then conclude the call. I mean, does anyone on the call currently have any additional comments that they would like to make? Hearing none. For those task force members on the call, what's your preference? Do you want to conclude the call now? Do you want to stay on the line and just mute and then see if we get any additional callers in the next few minutes and then terminate the call, or terminate the call at this time?
I certainly don't mind waiting.
Okay. Why don't we just wait, see if anybody has any additional comments they'd like to make. And then in the meantime, we can, we can just, about 5 minutes. It's now about 11:05. We'll wait till 11:10. If we don't get any additional comments, we can then terminate the call. In the meantime, I guess, Ross and Franny, I understand you all are going to, take it on yourselves to, review and incorporate the public comments. And looking at the calendar, it looks like that. The comments are due on the 5th,
mm-hmm.
which is a Monday. And then I had spoken briefly with Franny, Ross, maybe last week. We were going to try to get whatever you all come up with in terms of your update of the report based on the public comments by the 7th, which is, 2 days later. That's a Wednesday. And then that would give the task force members, a couple of days before the weekend to look it over. And I think we have to submit our updated. It's unclear to me whether this is an updated preliminary report or whether it's a final report.
It's supposed to be the final report.
Supposed to be the final report? Okay. And then, but in any event, we're going to submit that final report on the 12th. So. That is that's the timeline, and it's going to be a little bit tight, but I think you guys should be able to do it, particularly if you're taking detailed notes on today's call. That should facilitate things. One of the things that had been suggested by someone was that we have a transcript prepared of today's call, and I'm wondering whether anyone on the task force, whether their company might agree to bear that expense of having a transcript made from the MP3 so that we can append that to the report. Any volunteers on that?
Brian,
yeah.
have made arrangements to have a transcript made of the MP3.
Okay, great.
And
will that be available, Glenn?
I hope it will be available tomorrow evening, Central European time. Is that all right?
So it'll be on the Task Force 3?
And I'll send it to the Task Force 3. At the latest, if it's not tomorrow evening, it will be during the morning of the next day.
Okay.
Glenn? Could you maybe distribute? Could you maybe also distribute the transcript to those who spoke on this call who are not Task Force 3 members?
Of course, Thomas.
Thank you.
All right. What was that? What was that request?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Thomas. I just didn't catch your request. I was distracted.
I asked that the transcript or the draft of it be forwarded to those who spoke on the call who are not on Task Force 3. After all, it's our words in there, so I guess.
Sure. No, that's fine. Or maybe at the very least that it be posted on the website so that people can download it if they choose.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wasn't sure. I didn't catch what you had said. Good idea.
Glenn?
Yes, Ken?
I'm sorry, I haven't heard anything for the last 30 seconds. I didn't know whether I missed something.
And Brian, we're just waiting to see if anyone else calls in with any additional comments. We're going to wait another...
I see. Okay. Thanks. I'm sorry to bother you, but I just thought maybe I'd missed something there.
No, I think we're going to wait about... 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Callers or comments will terminate the call at that time.
Alrighty, fine. Thank you very much.
Well, at this point, unless anybody has any further comments, I would suggest we terminate the call. What do you all think about that?
Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and terminate the call at this point. And then, Glenn, we'll look for the transcript on the site. Are you going to send around an email to the task force?
When the transcript is ready, I'll send around an email to the task force, and I'll put it up on the GMSO website. Is that all right, Brian?
That sounds fine.
Good.
Okay, thanks so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.